Good morning, everybody. This is Lizzie and Justin on Turning Towards Life. We are live. It's 9 a.m. UK time on Sunday, the 27th of May, 2018. We are very, very glad to be here today with a source of Justin's writing that we're going to be speaking about together. You'll be pleased to know that we've been practicing our radio voices. So we have been saying, we are live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then pretending to go. So I'm feeling rather amused at this point in time. Justin was just talking about a radio show that he recently went on. And maybe, Justin, you could tell people a little bit more about that as well, so they can be pointed to an interview you've done with somebody, because that's pretty cool. So we wanted to welcome you and say hello to anybody new, and also to anybody watching live or anybody catching up later. We are extremely grateful that you're here, and we are going to get going.
We are. Thank you, Lizzie. I'm so pleased to be doing this morning. I'm sitting outside this morning. I'm away with my family in a tiny little house where everybody can hear everything. And it's Sunday morning and nearly everyone is asleep. So I thought I'd risk sitting outside. And we've had extraordinary thunderstorms overnight. So I'm hoping I'll be kept safe from the worst of the storms. And I'm very excited about bringing this source, which is something I've written every now and again. Lizzie, you and I get to bring things that are our own creations into this project. And I'll say a bit more about that in a moment. But first, the radio program. So you can check out Inner Force with Angela King. It's an American radio program, internet radio. And Angela is involved in the wider New Ventures West integral coaching community that Lizzie and I are both involved in, which is the center of the work that we teach. And she's also, very fascinatingly enough, former high-powered executive at Apple, who is now doing very other things with her life. So she and I got to talk about courage for about 15 minutes on the radio a couple of weeks ago. It was a very exciting thing to do. And so if you search for Inner Force with Angela King, you can find us. And also, I know many other really wonderful guests that she has on that program. So that's right. So we... this is something different from a radio show with jingles and adverts and all of that kind of thing. But
although Justin Sun has written us a jingle, people, that is true. So we might have, we're planning a podcast, and some of the Justin Wise family musical creativity to be involved in it. So I'm very excited about that.
That's right. People keep on asking us more and more for a podcast version of this project, so that will be coming as well, with jingle and everything else, I'm sure.
It's all about the jingle.
It is the most important thing. So I'm going to dive in and read this source. We decided it's a little bit longer than usual, so I'm going to read it and then we're going to talk about it. And I want to just say something about it for the moment, about bringing this. And when it was my week to choose the source, and I'd been thinking a lot in the last couple of weeks, partly because of things Lizzie and I have been involved in our work, and partly because of questions I've been in the middle of how often it is and how easy it is that we expect that something will come along and change us. And that when the something happens that will change us, everything will be okay. And this post came from my experience that it doesn't often go that way. And wanting to be in a big question about it, like most of the writing I've been doing, I tend to write about things where I don't know rather than where I do know, where I've got a big question that I want to explore. And this is certainly a big question that I'm really looking forward to us getting into. So here we go. It's called Practice, Not Events. Between June 2011 and the following July, I had 3 close encounters with death, 3 life-punctuating events brought about by sudden and unexpected changes within my body, each shocking and frightening, each a reminder of how fragile and unpredictable life can be. As I recovered from each episode, I expected, hoped, that I would in some way be profoundly different. I wanted so much to find myself more grateful, more accepting, more joyful of life's many small blessings, less judgmental, less afraid, less irritated by small things, more kind, and more dedicated to being present and welcoming and loving with the people who mattered to me. But it didn't work out so simply. I emerged from each experience blinking and shaken and grateful, and soon settled back into many of my familiar patterns. Over time, I found myself thinking about this differently. What happens if I allow these experiences to inform the way I live rather than expecting them to change me? How can I, having encountered the possibility of death so closely, use my experience to commit fully and wisely and generously to life? In taking on this question, I'm finding out that the change I seek is more a question of practice than of events, and that I am an ongoing process much more than I am a thing with enduring properties, an object that is a particular way. I live myself into being day after day. I'm always living myself into being by the very ways in which I live. How I move, how I take care, how much I take care of myself, how I express curiosity and interest in the world, how I speak and listen, how I sleep, how I sing and laugh, how I play and create, how I bind myself up in community, how I practice compassion and stillness, how I love, how I work. All these shape the life I'm living and who I become far more than the punctuating events themselves. And this tells me so much about the mistaken ways in which I look for change in myself and in my relationship with others. When I mistake life for a thing, I imagine an event of sufficient power will do it. An affecting conversation, a kiss, a show of force, a book with a revelatory idea in it, an illness, a windfall, a conference, an argument, the right gift, or a brush with death will fix things in the same way that I might fix a dented metal bowl by attempting to knock it into shape. But when I know myself as a living, unfolding process, events take up their proper place as teachers rather than fixers, educating me about the ongoing practices by which I can take care of this one precious life. The more I imagine events alone will do it, the more I set myself up for the despair and frustration that comes from relying on something that cannot help. And the more I commit to the ongoing, long-term, diligent, and patient practice of living in a way that brings life, the more genuine reason I have to hope.
Again, Justin, this is so, you know, I've read this source a few times and hearing you say it and you have written it and having your tone and your voice and your you-ness in the sound of you involved in this delivery is really moving to me, and I could feel like the ache of it as well in my chest, and it feels there's like an arc to it as well. There's a kind of, for me listening to you, there's a kind of a certain kind of liberation happens, like a reluctant liberation happens as the piece unfolds. But I think the first thing to say is that, you know, so many of us are in relationships, friendships, marriages, parenting, with our mums and dads, with our colleagues, where in this case, this happened to you and it didn't happen to me, but I care about you. And so I have this initial feeling of also kind of wanting to take the event away, you know, wanting you not to have had this really frightening experience and wanting you to be saved from something. And it's such a human thing to feel this powerless and this wanting all at the same time. And there's a kind of like a hurt feeling in it for me, feeling you being shaken and frightened and wishing all of these things. I just noticed that even with this, it's past, it's okay, you're okay. I can still feel the pain in it for me, in my experience, and it has me feel into what it must be like to be with people in far more present circumstances now. And of course, this was super present then. the one who's at the side of things and is not the person who's suffering, but the kind of powerlessness that it is to be with somebody who is in danger or ill or in emotional pain or in some kind of deep difficulty. And it's really, really hard. And I just want to point to that. And I have some people in my life at the moment who are going through that particular thing. I know the person who's in trouble, and I also know the person who's supporting the person in trouble. And it's so difficult to be in that position, I think, as well.
It's very moving hearing you say all of that, Lizzie. And you said something among many things that you said that were powerful and important. I really noticed what happened for me when you talked about your wish to save me from the experience. And I realized as you said it that a big part of this whole story, what I've written here, is actually about our human wish to save from and to be saved from.
Yeah.
Like, I get when you say it that part of this story is I had this series of terrifically frightening, sometimes and arresting events, two of which were actually seriously life-threatening. And there's such a big part of me that wants, because I had that experience, now for me never to have to face trouble again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this will do it. I've had my initiation. Now I need never be scared, afraid, self-critical, unsure of myself. And you spoke about your side of this and hearing the story of wanting to save as well. And it seems to me that I think in a way this is precisely why I wanted to bring this source this week, is to get into this inquiry about this fantasy that we have that something, whether it's a terrible something or a wonderful something, that it will appear, a person or a, I read a list of things in the middle of this that it could be, it will appear and then we'll be freed from the troubles of life, or we'll have power over the troubles of life. That's the other thing I can feel in myself. Aha. And so now, because I face death, I will have power over life and death, and I will no longer have to, nothing will be complicated anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I can see, that just turns out to be a myth. It's not, you know, I've also had events in my life, unexpected, you know, great blessings where I felt exactly the same thing. Oh, now everything's going to be okay. It doesn't make life any more or less okay, really.
Mm-hmm.
Life continues to be as it is, whatever the events are. Which, of course, I'm not saying this in a simplistic way, like life is just one thing, whatever events are. Life will be life, whatever the events are. And we still have to face it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I got interested in this, in the idea of practice. How do we let go of the idea that my life has to be a particular way?
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when we find we can't make it a particular way. And if we can't make life a particular, if we can't guarantee any of that, what's a different question about how we might live than, as I find myself doing so much still, always trying to get life my way, trying to get life my way, and life won't easily cooperate in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think life cooperates in all kinds of other ways, but not often in that way.
Mm. Yeah, it's so interesting, Justin, because I can also find, so I'm finding in some ways great comfort in what you're saying, because there's part of me that's like, oh God, the thing's not going to come and save me, the event is not going to change me, you know, the kind of ultimate hope of somebody or something descending and scooping me up and saying, it's all right, I've got you. It's not going to happen. And likewise, what I'm hearing you say is that the other side of that is that the difficult stuff is not also going to then ruin me either. It's like the events don't have the power. As I'm finding myself feeling encouraged by, you know, I sometimes have these kind of dark fantastical moments where I think, oh gosh, I'm going to, you know, for example, I'm going to become a parent and then I'm going to be dark forever. You know, I have like some belief that's like when something happens, it's going to send me into some terrible place and I'm never going to be able to come out again. And then hearing you say things like that, it's like, oh, or maybe life will continue on mostly as the way I've been practicing before. Like there will be a, of course, events like you're saying could be a teacher for me, but the ongoing becomingness that's mine, that my consciousness is brought to through everyday practice, through everyday commitment to certain things and people and community, those things will still be there and they will hold me. And so this kind of fantastical dark future version of myself of, you know, when this happens, I will become something or it will ruin me, or I, that kind of dreadful thinking that I can get into. There's a way that I go, oh, hold on a second. Actually, what if life, as you say, continues on with me in it? Like all the things that I do and the ways that I participate and the essentialness that I bring and the relationships that I hold and the support that I have and the practices I can create in response to the life that's in front of me right now. And it brings hope in all directions to feel this, what is it? This kind of empowerment, this kind of, oh, so I can do something. I'm not just going to be, because it's like events in my mind right now, it's like events equals victim thinking. And practice equals empowered thinking, feeling. Like I'm getting this feeling of, oh, so if I'm just subject to all the time, I'm just being dragged around by life. But if I am participating in, I am life. So I'm not separate from life. Whereas the events and the victim feeling feels like I'm separate from life and it's just having its way with me. But the practicing helps me be life itself consciously, so that I don't feel excluded or separate from or exiled from, which feels to me like a really important, life-giving, comforting, responsible invitation.
Yes. It's just such a brilliant example that you're bringing about your story about, should you become a parent, what that will mean. Because one of the things it shows me is, and I, of course, mostly what is happening as you're talking about that is it's bringing up in me the stories I have about events as well, which is sort of on the one hand, I am the event. So if I get ill, it means something about me. Something definite about me. Or if I've been thinking a lot about stories I have about it having been my birthday a couple of weeks ago and being 48 and all the stories I have about that event, the kind of person I'm meant to be, or how known I'm meant to be, or what material situation I'm meant to be, and all of those stories. And so we have I noticed that I have stories about one way about the kind of control over events that I meant to have if I were a proper person, and similarly to you, and yours is such a beautiful and striking example of what an event will inevitably make me into. And you said this, I can't remember now exactly the way you said it, Lizzie, but you said something about being held by life. And it struck me that maybe one of the ways of seeing through this is that we're held by life always, mm-hmm. even in the most terrible of situations, even in the most beautiful situations. And one of the ways in which we're held by life is exactly in what you're saying is in our capacity. There is one place that we have some choice over, which is how we practice in the midst of whatever's happening. Because mm-hmm. boy, do we not have control over events in the way that we imagine. I mean, we really don't. And in our super individualistic culture, which also lays all responsibility for how things go on you. Like, if you get your exam results, if you blah, 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 then.
Yeah.
You know, I keep on meeting people.
Yeah.
Meet people with vast material resources, and you speak to them for a while about how it ended up that way, that they were so, you know, had that kind of material security. And it turns out that their parents were, or they were introduced to someone who, or they had a particular longing or love in them for this particular line of human activity, and it turned out to be one that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and similarly the other way, people who are struggling for basic things like having enough food and all of that, speak to people, and it's, well, their parents were, or this happened, or that happened. So it's not events and us are way more tenuously related than we think. And I know I'm finding you can't see here the way I'm sitting because I've got a wall behind me, but this week I'm by the sea, so I can see the sea from where I'm sitting. We're in Cornwall in the southwest of England, and it's a cloudy, foggy day with big sea in front of me. I know that there are certain practices. So for me, these days, walking or a really simple sitting meditation practice, like the one that we invite people to take up when they're students on our coaching programs, all of that. Some really simple practice like that plays a huge role in my being able to be present to what's happening, which is a practice. Sometimes welcoming it. Sometimes being freed from this equivalence that we're talking about here, where we make events and us into the same thing. And that is one of the things that we have some choice over.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I think practice is so important, and which is why I think events are overrated. I mean, events are wonderful and important. They're everywhere in life. Events happening all the time.
Yeah. But
I wonder if it makes sense for me to say that events are overrated, at least in the way that we think about what makes a life.
Mm-hmm. And literally, Justin, so interesting, what's arriving in me is that when you say this thing about events, so for, I don't know for how many years now, I've been feeling this whole, like, the thing about birthdays, Christmas, going on holiday, you know, all the kind of punctuation of life where we're celebrating, or even when we're, you know, I had two family members die last year. Every time I'm kind of at the thing, at the birthday thing, at the funeral, at the Christmas dinner, at the New Year's party, on the plane somewhere, whatever, I have this huge big feeling of meaninglessness, of this is going to be gone. So why did I think this was going to make it all fine, or make the thing go away, or make it okay somehow in whatever piece of life I'm currently in? And I feel like in this moment, I'm seeing much more clearly that this feeling of meaninglessness is an invitation to just this, which is, like, you know, not letting me ride on events, you know, not expecting that events, things that happen, are going to fill me up. Not putting so much onus on happenings that I think that they are going to make life okay or make it enjoyable or something. And so I feel really, you know, it's like we have this kind of attitude towards things like meaninglessness or feeling depressed or hopeless, where we feel like it's what we shouldn't be feeling. But I'm seeing so clearly in this moment how my meaninglessness feelings are invitations to the deepening of practice, to the deepening of every moment is equal to the next moment, and nothing is anything but a series of a moment or however many that build something, that practice into something. And it also somehow gives me then the capacity to actually enjoy things when they happen, rather than have so much pressure on them that I I'm trying to get something from them, and therefore I miss them. And so I'm seeing really clearly how I put all this onus on events to do something, to give me something, to help me with something, and to put that pressure on happenings takes away the gift of them, as you're inviting us to feel into in your writing, as teachers rather than fixers.
Yes. I've got thinking. Oh, sorry, Lizzie, go on.
I was just going to say what it does to us to do that.
Hmm.
Like, it's actually like we are diminishing the possibility of it, even in the most beautiful circumstance. And then we might miss it.
Hmm.
Whatever that teaching is, we haven't got it because we put too much pressure on it to be the thing that made everything okay.
Yes. And of course, events, life is filled with events. But the question is, I think, as you're saying, is what's our practice in the middle of them, not the event itself?
Yeah.
I was thinking whilst you were talking about weddings, you know, in this, I was thinking about two things. So one was weddings, and the story that we have about weddings in our culture, it'll be the most important day of your life.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
I know.
I hope it's a lovely day if you get married to someone, but the wedding is the portal into a new kind of commitment to someone else that is made by how you live, which is a question of practice. It's not made by the wedding.
Yes.
And the other one I was thinking about was, you and I get to do work in organizations in different ways. I was thinking about the way this happens in the life of work, where we organize an away day or bring in some consultants, and we think we're going to have this transformational day or week. We're going to do this thing and everything will be different.
Mm-hmm.
Such a common, whole industry is built on this premise. And I feel like so often in our work, we have to go in and say to people, no, not that premise, because it's only in how you live afterwards, how you speak and how you listen. And
yeah.
So I got thinking about that. But here's the other thing that I wanted to say whilst we have time, and I don't know why this came up, but I wanted to tell you about part of this, one of these events that seemed really relevant to what you were saying just now. After the first of these three occurrences that I wrote about was turned out to be something completely banal and not at all life-threatening, but it had resulted in me having very severe chest pains and collapsing, probably more from the pain and the fear about what was happening than anything else. And so I had all kinds of investigations afterwards. And there was this one moment, Lizzie, where someone was doing an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound of my heart. And I was fortunate enough to be able to see the pictures. So I was lying in this bed watching my heartbeat. And it suddenly hit me so strongly. First of all, how beautiful this was. Just one of the most beautiful sights I've ever seen. And second of all, was that every multi-celled living thing, pretty much, right back to the dawn of all life, has had one of these. Circulatory systems came in early. Early fish had them, and early whatever had them. And we're all united by these pulsing things that keep going for as long as we're alive, without us having to do anything. It was a beautiful experience for which I'm really grateful for. And I think what it teaches me when I remember it, boy, do I forget it, but when I remember it, it teaches me exactly what you were saying, which is events come and go. Stuff happens. It's always coming and going. The whole world is coming and going all the time. But there's a thread that we follow through it. And the thread we follow through it is in large part made up by how we respond and how we've practiced responding by our ongoing everyday.
Mm.
How will I be in this? And how will I be in this? And how will I be in? And that's what practice is.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel, as you say that, I can feel, you know, I can feel into my yoga teachers, firstly, of their speaking of the breath and connecting to the life that's in us. And how what you just said is the best explanation of why the breath, why be conscious of the breath, you know, why be conscious of our heartbeat. Because it's at that level of attunement to life that we can live as practice. It feels to me in this moment, it's like connecting with those things, connecting with what's there on the ECG, on the echocardiogram. In this moment, just noticing that the rhythm of the flow of my breath, it's like to bring ourselves into contact with that, being in this deep reminder of life itself, feels like another beautiful, important invitation for us as human beings. We're basically asleep to that the majority of the time. You know, bolting around, doing stuff, whatever we're up to. And I just feel in the moment just very moved by that. And I've also had an ECG and remembering what it was like to see my heart on a thing and kind of also be quite dissociated from it. It's like, oh no, that's not me. That's something on a television screen. It's so hard to connect with it in some ways as well. But I feel really invited by that and the kind of rationale of what you've written, connecting into those life forces, feels really integrating to me.
Yes, I think that's a really astonishing and beautiful place to end, Lizzie, where the really what we've been talking about is remembering that we're life. And that others are life too, and recognizing that in one another. And so often we forget that and we treat ourselves like things. That's how we understand ourselves. Like you say, it's really rare for us to get deeply to get a glimpse of that. But it's a far, well, it seems to me it's in a very basic way true. And true things are also always very helpful. But it also is filled with a kind of possibility and freedom for bringing ourselves and for being in whatever comes, and maybe even for helping one another. Well, I'm so glad we made this work this morning.
Yes, me too.
I wondered whether technology, given the different places we're in today, would work, and it all seems to have worked fine. So I'm so grateful to have done this with you, and very grateful to all of you who stayed with us and who stay with us week after week and who invite other people to join. Mm-hmm. We can only do this really because of you, so thank you.
Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next week at 9 a.m. with our radio voices switched up.
Bye, everyone.
And thank you, Justin.